Muplesion. We need to be clear. You're here to wait tables, the elder said. We have heard what our foreign brothers and sisters have asked of us, and that's why we've called you here. To help us navigate between some of the differences that are here, to make certain everyone has enough. But we need to acknowledge the cultural differences in our group, but that is the extent of your role. You're to wait tables. That is the need. That is your role. So you and six of your countrymen set out to do that work, to make certain that those with cultural differences in different groups have a voice, to explain things both in language and in culture so that all have what they need. And that was your aim. That was your role. Until they came for you, grabbed you and brought you in front of a mob, and they asked you to speak, to proclaim, to tell and defend what this was that you had given your life towards, this new way of life that you are living. And you start to speak, but you hesitate because to speak is the 12's role. They made that abundantly clear. Your role is to wait tables. To speak was their authority, a role for those native to this land. But you take a chance in the face of death. You speak and you preach the longest sermon in Acts, heralding in a change to God's kingdom, one that expands the role beyond just of Hebraic Jews to foreigners, even foreigners as yourself who were supposed to simply wait tables. Muplesion. Cheryl Boucher and her husband Ralph are farmers. And they've had an interesting and convoluted story of becoming farmers. They met in traffic court. Cheryl was driving a station wagon and she was speeding. Ralph was driving a sports car and he was going too slow. This kind of incorporates their life together. When they set out to be farmers in the state of Washington, it was a rough ride. They had crops that fell out, things that didn't happen. And years, they were in debt. And they often had to work not only to work on paying their debts, but just to put food on the table. So they often worked for other farmers in the area. And so that when they finally got out of that debt, they had a very important view of the people that worked for them when they got their own farm. They had been those people. And so when their workers started to change, started to become people who had traveled a long way to get to Washington, they did what they had always done. They rolled up their sleeves, they worked alongside, and they listened. And after working alongside their foreign workers, they decided to travel to Mexico. And after traveling to Mexico, they had decided that God had sent them economic refugees. So they did what they always did. They rolled up their sleeves, they worked alongside, and they listened. They decided to open a packing plant for their apple farm. One, good for their business, but also providing jobs for people. And strangely enough, as they're working alongside, they hear that now with mom and dad both being able to work, many families are pulling their older children out of school to watch the younger kids at home. So they work to open up a childcare for the younger kids so the older kids can go to school. And from that, they start hearing all kinds of things from the children about living conditions. So they pull out a small loan to build 100 homes. They started a residential program for teens who become involved with gangs. That they helped build an elementary school, laundromat, college scholarships, all kinds of fun things. And the Bouchers, when they're doing this, they're doing what they always do. They rolled up their sleeves, they worked alongside, and they listened. And so when some of their coworkers came to them and said, listen, we really want to work with farmers in Mexico, the Bouchers' answer was, how can we help you? And so at one point, they were working with 80 small apple growers in Mexico, teaching sustainable farming techniques, and 160 people had moved back to their homes because they were able to survive there. And their coworkers wanted to keep helping people, so now they work with six other countries around the world, working with farmers, finding ways to have sustainable farms. And a lot of people will come to Bouchers and they'll say, man, what a wonderful story you have. Look at all the cool things you've done for people. And the Bouchers will just chuckle and they'll say, listen, you got to understand, we didn't do a whole lot of this. We were just smart enough to stop and listen. Muplesion. Perhaps she had bitten off a little bit more than she could chew. She could tell by the servants' looks that they thought she had overstepped her bounds. even for the woman of the house, this maybe wasn't her role. But her husband had left her with few options. So she got the procession together, saddled her donkey, and led it, hoping it was enough. And as they came down through the mountain pass, they saw a huge multitude rushing to them with blood in their eyes. Their leader in the front with his sword out with vengeance beaming off of him. And she quickly dismounted, and instructed the servants to display the gifts. And she bowed, hoping he would listen to reason. Was it her place? She really couldn't worry about that right now. She was trying to stop bloodshed over a fool. So she prepared her words and hoped. Hope bread, wine, slaughtered sheep, figs, raisins, and grain were enough to quench the fire of a giant slayer. Quench it enough to listen to a woman who was perhaps not in her place, but was where she needed to be. Mu pliation. Since 2010, Matthew Stevenson has had a Shabbat meal at his house, pretty close to campus, inviting all kinds of friends from school over there to have a meal together to get to know one another. This was another such day, but it's a little different today. There's not as many people there, and there's a little bit of tension in the air. Their friend Derek, who has been there before, is coming again, but this time it's different. They know Derek is Derek Black. Derek Black, the son of Don Black, the one who made the website Stormfront for the white nationalist movement. Derek Black, the son of Don Black, who was a one-time KKK grand wizard. Derek, the godson of David Duke. Derek, who many thought to be the heir of white nationalism. Maybe he's never actually spent time with a Jewish person before, Matthew thought to himself and said it out loud to others in the room as they all sat back and thought about the things that they found out that Derek had said about Jews and other people, that Jews are not white, that Jews worm their way into power in our society, that Jews must go. And as they sat down with Derek when he came, they wondered if anything could go back the way it was. So they came and they sat. And 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 slowly, over time, they continued to treat Derek with worth. And slowly found that Derek thought they had worth too. And Derek had begun to question all these things that his parents had taught him, that they had raised him to believe. All because of a Jew who warmed his way into society saw worth in Derek, even though many would have just seen an enemy. Mu pliation. Jaazaniah and his people were strangers in the land. Their way of life, different. Their language, a little similar, but different. Their religion, different. And that's why Jaazaniah was concerned when one of the indigenous holy men came to him and his people and said that he wanted to speak to him. For him and his brothers, they had traveled enough to know that people were wary of different people. They had found this place of sanctuary because of war in the countryside, so they've stayed here a little bit longer than they normally would, but people get antsy with different people. So Jaazaniah entered the house of the holy man, anxious. Anxious of what this meant for his people. Anxious what it meant for his family. They were strangers to this land. They were strangers to this land's God. Your vows to your ancestor Jehonadab, son of Rechab, you hold in greater honor than my people Israel's vows to me, proclaimed Yahweh through Jeremiah. I wish they'd learn from you. And perhaps they would listen to me. Thank you, and know you will always have someone of your family, your tribe, to stand before me. Always. Mu pliation. Sorry I'm late, Megan said with a big smile you hadn't seen in a while on her face. You chuckle to yourself as Megan bounces into the library with a lot of energy that you hadn't seen in a long time, and a lot of care that you hadn't seen in a long time in her. Megan had been through several foster parents since you had met her at East Literature Magnet. Some did the bare minimum care. Some forgot to feed her. At least one set had sexually abused her. But this new home, cared for her, fed her, told her that they loved her and she had worth, and they followed those words with actions. And though you were still learning about these two mothers who had taken in your little Megan, there was no doubt that the love they had shown this young lady, a young lady so forgotten and abused by so much of the world, this love was an act of God to go and do likewise. Mu pliation. Caetis esten mu pliation, asked the lawyer after the rabbi spoke. And who is mu pliation? And who is my labor, my neighbor? Jesus looked at the lawyer, he smiled, and he told a story. And when Jesus had finished the story, he asked the lawyer, which of these three was the neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robber? And when the lawyer answered, Jesus simply replied, Poioe kai su poie omios. Go and do likewise. There are a lot of stories in our world trying to tell us who our neighbors are. In regards to race, in regards to culture, in regards to money, our children, our nation. Shoot, there's plenty of strands out there trying to tell us you really shouldn't worry about who your neighbors are. You should just worry about yourself. And when I hear these stories, I admit they puzzle me. Because when I think of Mupliason, I think of Isis, who lives across the corner here, who I don't know if ever has been here on a Sunday morning. But if you were to ask her, she would tell you, this is her church home. Not only would she come here if she needed help, but if we had a community meeting here, of which she was slightly annoyed at us because we did something, and somebody spoke up about living water asking if we did anything in community, Isis would tell them, what rock have you been living under? Because this church is doing stuff here. I think of Lisa outside of Morse Market selling street rice with a smile beaming on her face. I think of Alex, Emmanuel, and Daniel Watu walking on the way to school, being a bunch of ding-dongs, and also shouting out a good morning to you when they see you. I think of our neighbors, Tony and Cass, who adore our children and shoveling the sidewalks with them. I think of Khadija, Hamid, Marzia, Razid, and Muhammad when they're at Minnow Haven. They're hanging out with Melanie Gonzalez by the pool. And Khadija asked her if it's all right if she got in the pool, to which Melanie said, oh, yeah. And Khadija, hijab and all, jumps into the pool. When I think of Mupliason, these are not nameless faces. They're our friends. They share our tables. Some of their children are our future sons and daughters-in-law. And more importantly, they're made in the image of God. And when they do better, we do better. And not in a way of pity, you know, like we need to save our neighbors. Because that's the scandal of the Samaritan story to me. Because I kind of feel like if a modern PR firm was to get the Samaritan story, this is how they would spin it, all right? They would say, you know what, the Samaritan, nobody's going to believe he's going to do some good stuff. Let's make him the guy who's going to get beat up. All right? Then Peter's going to pity him. All right? They're going to go, oh, that poor, pitiful Samaritan. We need to be nice to them. But that's not what the Samaritan story is. It doesn't end with him needing help from the priest. He didn't need help from the Levite. He didn't need help from the people of God. Here's a story where the follower of Yahweh had acknowledged that someone outside who they were comfortable calling their neighbor, who they were even comfortable calling the people of God, did something that they needed to imitate. Jesus told him he had to acknowledge power in this Samaritan. Not hate him, not pity him. Rather, this lawyer, this Jew, this knower of Torah should stop and follow people like this Samaritan. Su poe omios. Do likewise. When I first moved to Rogers Park, I knew there was a lot of things I needed to learn about being in Rogers Park. And I quickly got connected with Anthony Boatman, Tony Boatman. And I met with him several different times, wanting to learn things from him. And Tony, at one point, I think like third meeting in, he said, "Stephen, what is it you're trying to get out of this?" And I thought I had a really good answer. And I said, "Tony, you know what? I'm a white male moving up to the north side of Chicago. I've worked in multicultural situations before, but North Chicago's got to be different. And I'd like to learn better what that means from an African-American male growing up in this neighborhood so I can empower the teens I'm working with." I thought it was a good answer. And Tony, if you know Tony, the way Tony does, he just chuckled. And he said, "Stephen, maybe the first place to start would be to acknowledge they have power. And you need to listen to them." Oh, snap. That Grecian Jews could do more than just wait tables. And waiting tables really shouldn't be looked down that much on anyways. Instead, they were people to be imitated. So, su poie omios. That undocumented workers from the south of the border are not people to be pitied, but co-workers to be listened to. Su poie omios. Despite it not being her place, or not, Abigail needed to do something before Nabal and David got everybody killed. Su poie omios. That even though some would have written off Derek Black as an enemy, Matthew Stevenson saw worth in him. Su poie omios. That even though some may consider them pagans, God saw in the Rechabites something to be imitated. Su poie omios. That regardless what you may feel about two mothers, that the two mothers who give love to a child abused by so many is an act of God. Su poie omios. That Jean-Marie, when he finishes high school, and he goes to a trade program, and before the trade program is done, he gets himself a job, of which he's driving to and from, and he has a car that he's borrowed to do this. And the car is randomly taken away from him, and Jean-Marie decides, "I got to get to work. It's 40 degrees out. I'll ride my bicycle. Round trip, 3 hours." And when we first start talking to Jean-Marie before this, and he starts working two different jobs, and he starts walking around like a zombie, and we're like, "Jean-Marie, why are you doing this?" And Jean-Marie simply says, "I want to help my mother." Su poie omios. That Pastor Somrock, when he heard that we had a child who was suffering from gender dysphoria, said, "We need to support this family and make certain this child knows they are loved by us and by God." Su poie omios. That Elsie, when she graciously opened her home to the teens and shared her story, and teens from Burundi, Tanzania, Congo, and Kenya started nodding their heads, emphasizing with Elsie as she described how it was always a little awkward and almost sometimes embarrassing when her parents talked with accents. Su poie omios. That Hafa Shimano running around Menno Haven doing what that extrovert nut of extroverts does when he's talking to different people, connecting different people, having a posse of kids following him around the campgrounds as people are getting to know each other because of Hafa. Su poie omios. That some of our Nepali teens who have come as refugees over to the U.S. having dreams to going back to Nepal to help people in Nepal. Su poie omios. Parents who work hard hours in a context and culture and language not their own. Su poie omios. To single parents working hard during the day and then again at night when their children need them. Su poie omios. That Francine on her way to work with Urban Tables on a day when it's 5 degrees maybe, and she's got a flimsy pair of shoes on, of the tops of her feet open, no socks. And when we ask her, "What are you doing?" She lets us know that she already had two boots, snow boots, and found other people who needed them more than she did. Su poie omios. Better is one day in your courts. Better is one day in your house. Better is one day in your courts than thousands elsewhere. And behold, I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, and I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "See, the home of God is among mortals. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them." Better is one day in your courts Better is a one day in your house, better is a one day in your courts than thousands elsewhere. We'll sing that again. Better is a one day in your courts, better is a one day in your house, better is a one day in your courts than thousands elsewhere. Who is Mupliation? These are my neighbors. These are your neighbors. These are our neighbors. And they're not to be reviled, nor are they to be pitied. But often I need to imitate them. To go en su poe omios. Brothers and sisters, I am neither a prophetess nor a prophet. My wife will tell you. But it seems like there have been a ton of things this past year vying to tell us who our neighbors are. And may we listen to the wisdom of Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie when she says there's a danger in having just a single story of anyone. That we are too complex, too vibrant, each and every one of us, to have a single story encompass who we are. And I admit, doing this sermon, having a tough time to say, okay, so now what do we do? Because one hand, I don't want us to be so naive to just say, oh, let's go tell stories to everyone, and everything will be all right. And then we'll sing Kumbaya, and it'll be great. Because reality is, that didn't even work all the time for Jesus. And as good as I am, I'm not going to get that good either. At the same time, I also don't want to give in to just hopelessness. I take comfort in the fact that Jesus told a lot of stories. I take comfort in the fact that there are more Derek Blacks out there who maybe haven't met others. I also take comfort in the fact of my own story, because I know when I have gotten to know more people, when I've learned beyond what it means to be a white Southern male, I've learned a lot when I've stopped to listen. And I also don't want to say, too, that we just need to work harder. Because let's be honest, we're all doing a lot of stuff, all right? And I'm not saying that to say you're all perfect, because you're not, and I'm not. But I also don't want to have one more thing we just cram in. But I wonder if we can start thinking creatively of the things we're already doing, the people we're already connecting with, when there's families that we go and we talk to, of what are the stories we share when someone tries to share a simple story of someone who's our neighbor. Or maybe what it means to go home to listen to stories of what it means to be people out in rural Kansas or wherever else. Because there's plenty more stories I need to hear and listen to. Perhaps it means more Shabbat meals. Again, maybe there's just ways to think better about this and not necessarily working harder. Because I do think we've been given a gift here. There's not a whole lot of places like Living Water. Now, that's a good and a bad thing sometimes. And that's the truth. But that's having honest stories. That there's a lot of things here that we can share. A lot of stories, a lot of names that we can directly share with. But we also need to be careful before we think we have a story for everyone and everything here. Because we don't. That there's a lot of things people can learn from us, but there's a lot of places in some rural areas around the world that we can also learn from too. And we are so much better with every part of this body. We wouldn't be the same if we're missing one part. Our neighborhood is so much better with every part of this neighborhood. Mu plesio. Su poe omios. Who is my neighbor? Go and do likewise. Pray with me. Great God in heaven, may we be people who acknowledge power, good, and godliness in others, not pity or hate. But may we acknowledge the good they do and go and do likewise, even if they are people outside the people of God. May we be people, when others speak in pity or hate of our neighbors, that we have Shabbat meals that we invite them to, maybe assuming that they haven't actually met our neighbors. And when they try to tell a single story to encapsulate our neighbors, may we offer that there are so many stories of our neighbors, stories of hope and sadness, stories of strength and weakness, that a single story could not suffice. So may we tell other stories of the wonderful things our neighbors have done, and that we should go and do likewise. May we be people that truly believe that when good is done on earth, the will of God is done on earth. That the courts of God are breaking into this present reality, that the home of God is among mortals, and it is truly better to have one day, just one day in those courts, than a thousand elsewhere. May we be that word, God. May we follow your word and be a part of it and clothe ourselves in flesh and walk this neighborhood. May your will be done, God, on earth as it is in heaven. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.